Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to start 2 o'clock, and it gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce Abelardo Rodriguez, that's the moderator for the next session. Abelardo, thank you.
And good afternoon, everyone. Okay, first of all, I would like to thank Dr. Bournier and the committee of this very interesting and exciting meeting. And you know, for me, it's a great honor and privilege to be here because I have very good memories from Montreal. As Dr. Bournier knows, my daughter Mariana starts working here in Montreal. Now is with me at his home, and many things about that from the Bourniers, from the laboratory, from many places, and we need to continue with the academic program. Okay. Our next speaker of the next group is Alexander Odashiro. He's going to present the topic of his lecture is a rare orbital tumor. And Alexander is from Brazil. Alexander, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Abelardo. It's an honor to be here and to be part of Dr. Bournier Fellows. The first time I came here in Montreal, I was a medical student, was 10 years ago, I was in the last year, and I found here not just a professor and a teacher, but also an example to be followed. And I felt I very blessed to have a professor that is also one of my best friends. That is Dr. Bournier. And he has influenced my life, not only my personal life, but also my career life, since the day I stepped here in Montreal 10 years ago. So Dr. Miguel, you're an example of obstination, patience, and wisdom, and most of all, character. And thank you very much. It's an honor to be here and be part one of your fellows all over the world. So let's move on to the presentation. As a pathologist, I brought you here a tumor or a case that was quite difficult to make the histopathological diagnosis. So this is a woman of 62-year-old, and she had a progressive proptosis in the left eye for 5 months. She was complaining of diplopia, and it was painless. So in the image, we can see that there was an expansive tumor invading, quite well circumscribed, but infiltrative, that invade also the sinus. And the surgeon removed the tumor. This is a post-op picture. And what we could see in the tumor, it was not encapsulated, but has a fibrous pseudocapsule that we called. And there was a lot of vessels, big vessels inside the tumor. And the tumor showed several patterns of growth. Most of them were spindle like this, and we could see spindle cells, and also what we called pseudo-angiomatous pattern that we see in some tumors, and we could see in this tumor also. In some parts, we could see blocks of cells that were invading, so the tumor was quite with different patterns. And when we go to the high power, we could see that we found epithelioid and very malignant cells with big nuclei and prominent nucleoli, and also spindle cells like this fusiform with eosinophilic cytoplasm. And also a lot of mitotic figures that we can see here, also one here. So it was highly mitotic tumor. With this morphology, it's difficult to make a diagnosis, but also what we could find in some parts of the tumor, it was these vacuoles within the cells. And in some parts, they are quite prominent that we see these vacuoles, and it was a very prominent feature that called our attention. So at this point in the AG&E, we just could say to the clinician that it was a malignant tumor, undifferentiated, And we are thinking that it could be a carcinoma, sarcoma, or even a melanoma that can simulate of them, of this undifferentiated tumor. So we told him that we're going to do immunohistochemistry to do the diagnosis. So immunohistochemistry starts with a panel that we always do for these undifferentiated tumors for keratin, A1, A3, and EMA. For carcinoma, HMB45, as we were thinking that could be a melanoma also, and MELAN-A for melanoma. And we did just for protocol and LCA for lymphoma. However, all of these things came negative. We also did a vimentin that was positive in the entire tumor. An S100 was also very positive, and this was the clue for the diagnosis for us. It was positive in the entire tumor and also in parts where we could see these vacuums. And we did a Ki-67 to see the proliferation rate of the tumor. It was confirmed that it was highly proliferative. In this panel, we also do muscular markers that could be to rule out a leiomyosarcoma, that actin and desmin that came negative. So the only thing that we found really positive that could give us the diagnosis was the S100, and together with the morphology, we did a diagnosis of liposarcoma. With this morphology, we can call that a pleomorphic liposarcoma and located in the orbit. We called the clinician, and they went through the patient to see if they have tumor in the other sides, and he told me that it was negative, and the patient is free of recurrence in 3 months of follow-up. So the treatment for this, they discussed it, and I told them that I had no experience, like this is very rare, I went to the literature, and they proposed an exoneration for the patient. But patient refused, and also she refused other treatments, such as radiation therapy. So she went to Sírio Libanês, that is an oncological hospital in São Paulo, in Brazil, and they confirmed the diagnosis, but she still refused the treatment, so now she's just be followed up. So liposarcoma, in fact, is the most common soft tissue sarcoma in adults, and corresponds to 10 to 20% of all sarcomas. In the orbit, it's very rare, and there is just 37 cases described in the literature. The liposarcoma are classified histopathologically into well-differentiated, mixoid or round cell, and the one that we have here, the pleomorphic. The well-differentiated, they have a lot of subtypes, and it's really important to differentiate it, to make it this distinction between them because of the prognosis. So about pleomorphic liposarcoma, it's one of the most aggressive types of liposarcoma. And what we have to see as prognostic factors, if it is central or peripheral, the number of mitotic figures, the proliferation rate of the tumor, and also tumor size. So this case was really liposarcoma of bad prognosis. So this is a great review that just came out in ophthalmology about primary liposarcoma of the orbit. And the median age is 42.9 years old. The median duration of the symptoms is 5 months, so it's quite what we have in our patient. Usually, the symptoms is proptosis, diplopia, and decrease in visual acuity. Pain is not common. And the location usually is intraconal and superior, most of the case. So from the histopathological point of view, the classification, the pleomorphic is one of the most unusual cases. And there's just 4 cases described in the literature of this tumor. And about the treatment, 16 patients that went local excision from primary liposarcoma, 12 of them had recurrence and further required exenteration. 11 patients that had exanthuration and a good follow-up. 10 of them are free of disease, and one of them had recurrence even after the exanthuration. It was after 5 years of the surgery. So we have just 4 cases in the literature of pleomorphic liposarcoma, so we don't know much about it, how it behaves. But 3 of them went to exanthuration, and one that did the local excision had recurrence and then had further exanthuration. So the patient here probably is going to be followed up because there is a great chance to have a recurrence in this patient. So from the 16 cases, 2 had metastasis and 2 lung and brain. And pleomorphic sarcoma described in the literature that usually it was, has worse prognosis. Radiotherapy, most of them apply radiotherapy in these tumors, not only the orbit, but elsewhere in the body. However, it doesn't prevent recurrence. The most important thing to prevent recurrence is the margins free. So I think that's why the patient refused also radiotherapy, because it could not prevent recurrence in this case. And chemotherapy is controversial. So I'd like to thank again Dr. Brunier and tell him that he's not just teach me pathology or ocular pathology, and also he teach me some tennis, so we are going to have. Thank you, and congratulations for all your success.
Questions or comments for Dr. Odashiru?
Doesn't look like, but how can we make a differential diagnosis with neurofibrosarcoma, for example, or malignant schwannoma, which are tumors that are S100 positive?
Exactly. So what they say is you have to do by the morphology and see if these vacuoles, they stain with S100. And also, that was one concern, because immunohistochemists, you can't do this distinction like in general. So they do cytogenetics, FISH translocation. That's what they did in Syro-Libanese.
Okay.
That confirmed. But usually the literature says that you have to see the vacuoles.
Another curiosity is, if you have material to do frozen section, you can do oil red oil. And if it's vacuole is fat, then this is a liposarcoma. I think it's perhaps is a more accurate way of making a differential diagnosis. I'm not saying that, of course, it looks like a pleomorphic liposarcoma, and you were right. Mm-hmm. But in order to differentiate it off other neurogenic tumors that can be as malignant sometimes, can be very poorly differentiated, I think oil red oil would be something that I would do. I also believe, and I want Gonzalo and, where is Marco? And Marco Piacentini to comment. I don't think exanthuration is going to change the natural history of the tumor. I think we do exanthuration after first or second recurrence just because you have to do it. But I don't think it does change anything in the natural history of the tumor, meaning this patient's going to have metastatic disease, patient's going to have metastatic disease with or without exanthuration, because you're never going to be able to really clear the margins.
And just to comment, unfortunately, most of the oral specimen, they don't send by frozen sections, they send in formalin. So,
just a comment. I think in the MRI, it clearly shows that the tumor has some parasinus invasion probably brain invasion. So, probably exanthuration won't do a major difference in the prognosis or even in the survival. I think, you know. Just by talking with radiotherapists, probably for sarcomas, radiotherapy is the best way to go, and chemotherapy has a minor influence in the prognosis, in the survival of patients.
I have a question here. It's kind of along the same lines as Dr. Bernier. Someone wanted to know, how do you differentiate between the pleomorphic liposarcoma from dedifferentiated liposarcoma?
Okay. And like this is important because pleomorphic liposarcoma has a much worse prognosis than the differentiated liposarcoma that usually behaves like a well-differentiated with part of undifferentiated. As I show you in the slide, like the differentiated liposarcoma is just a subtype of the well-differentiated liposarcoma. So you have always to see areas of well-differentiated liposarcoma, and then you see the bad part or the most undifferentiated part, and then you call that dedifferentiated. But here we just saw the malignant, or not malignant, but everything is malignant, but the most pleomorphic type part. So there is no well-differentiated liposarcoma here. So that's how we do the diagnosis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.